When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Cup of Cubby Blue. Your baseball starts tomorrow. Home for Cubs news, notes, and banter. We're proudly affiliated with the Fans First Sports Network. And we took a little bit of a hiatus for the offseason, but you know we are not going to miss being back with baseball at Wrigley Field. I am Sarah Sanchez, and as always, I am joined by the one and only Danny Rocket. Danny, how's it going?
Well, Sarah, first of all, it's great to be back here talking to you. And it's not that we haven't seen each other. We have seen each other over this offseason. We've done a few things, Cubs convention we were both at and stuff like that. But yeah, until the team was put back together and we were ready to start, you know, there's nothing to talk about. We had it covered. You have it covered on your other podcast. I got it covered on the Sun Ranto show. We're on the Bleacher Bunch Network, which has a ton of great different shows that get thrown out there, including the Cubs PS Plus podcast. So, you know, we figure we got it covered. Now that the baseball season's ready to start, you and I are ready to start. But I got a bone to pick early on with the Cubs. Sarah, last year you went and you got to hit on the field at Wrigley Field as part of the Hit the Buds competition. So this year they did that today. And I was like, oh, 9:30, you go down there. And if you don't get the chance to hit, at least you're going to get a couple of tickets to a cold April game or something like that. So let me show you on this card that I got, a little scratch-off ticket. I did not win the chance to have being selected to be in the to hit on the fields, but I won tickets, two tickets. But look at my code, XXXXXXXXXX, and I'm like, this code looks a little suspect for a ticket code. And I come home with my scratched off ticket, type in the get to the address online, type in my XXXXX, lowercase, uppercase, all the ways. Maybe I'm missing an X. Maybe I got one too little. I tried all the X, combinations I could. And alas, no tickets are coming my way. I don't know what's going on. I wrote to the Cubs. I'm like, hey, I go down there at 9:30 in the morning. I freeze my butt off to try to get this thing. And you're going to jip me on the tickets? Come on now. Get your quality control. I want my freezing April tickets behind a pole in Terrace Reserved. So we'll just start there. Not off to a great start this season.
I didn't even head over there this year. Shout out to anyone who did. It's an amazing experience. Getting to hit at Wrigley Field last year was one of the top 10 moments of my baseball life. It was truly one of those things that I couldn't have dreamed of in a million years. I was so excited about it. I'm not going to lie. I have been so busy with my day job, with if you are a fantasy baseball person, you know that I started a fantasy baseball podcast over at Pitcher List called Fantasy Feud. Definitely check that out if you haven't already. It's a debate-centered fantasy baseball podcast, and I'm having a blast with my friend Shelley Verstrate debating out all the issues with some of our friends in the industry. But between that, the day job and writing, right? Because I still write at Bleed Cubby Blue. I still write at Baseball HQ. Danny, I have been maxed out. So I'm really excited that we were able to get this together. I'm really bummed that I did not go freeze my butt off for the opportunity to hit at Wrigley Field today. But, you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do with work and the day job and all that jazz. And I'm just stoked to be back talking about baseball with you. And if you do wind up with one of those freezing April games, of tickets, let me know, because you know I'm always down to hang out in Terrace Reserved.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, the Cubs were going to give me these tickets for free. It's not happening. You know, I don't think there's going to be any shortage of free to low cost tickets, because the weather does not look great coming up. I mean, luckily the Cubs open in Texas, but they're back here on Monday, and the last I saw was 40s and a 70% chance of rain. And then you look into the future for the games at Wrigley Field. The Dodgers come into town. We have some pretty big series against pretty great teams early on in the season. And man, it looks cold, like 50s, 40s. I mean, those night games are going to be brutal. So, so yeah, bundle up, get yourself some hand warmers. I got electronic hand warmers. They work great. I highly recommend them, but it looks like it's going to be a cold start to the season at Wrigley. But yeah, it's back. I got really sick of spring training about like 2 weeks in. I was like, okay, let's bring on the games.
Okay. Well, two things about the start to the schedule. It's always cold in April at Wrigley. That's
not
because
always,
it's April
yeah.
at Wrigley Field. I mean, okay, 75% of the time it is cold. Yes. April in Wrigley. The Monday game, you're right, it is showing periods of rain and 51 right now, but I don't know, man. Like,
that's cold.
You and I both know that the Chicago weather can turn on a dime. That could be 54 and sunny. And we're like 5 days out. It could definitely change.
Might be a foot of snow.
Even if it does not change. True. It could be 35 degrees and frigid. Even if it does not change, I am going to that game. I already have tickets to it. I'm going with our friend Ken Schultz. And the reason I am going to that game, and maybe we can just start here because things to watch for this season is the theme of today's show. Shota Imanaga is making his major league debut at the Cubs home opener. Which whoever at the Cubs, and I'm sure this was something Craig Counsell and Jed Hoyer put their heads together on to make sure this happened. But when they lined up the rotation, rather than lining it up, you know, you normally go like all your best starters in a row, they decided to have Justin Steele start the season. And then they're going to have, I think it's Jordan Wicks and maybe Javier Assad go for those last two games in Texas to allow Shota to pitch the home opener at Wrigley. I just can't think of anything cooler than making your MLB debut at the Wrigley home opener. That is next level fairy tale stuff, and I'm here for it.
Well, if the weather permitting, I mean, it's like, welcome to Chicago, Shota. Remember like when he came and visited, it was like 70 degrees in February. Cause didn't he spend the winter here to see if it was nice?
I have not read that, but maybe if he spent the winter here to see if it was nice, he probably was not very happy.
You know,
although this winter was relatively mild.
Yeah, no, this winter was relatively mild. And no, actually, I've got it mixed up. I'm actually thinking of Seiya Suzuki, I think, that came here first. I know some player came from Japan, checked it out first, and it was nice here. And I might be mixing up the stories. I probably am. So
you might not be. I just don't remember the story. I know with Seiya, they sent him like a PowerPoint that said the average temperature during the baseball season in Chicago was the same as Japan. And they were, and then Seiya got here and was freezing in April and was like, this is not like Japan.
Yeah, and I saw you put also in the notes about Seiya Suzuki, can he stay hot? And like I think, yes, he had a great – I don't want to get into that right away. I want to stay with opening day.
Can we talk about Shota first, and then we'll get to Seiya?
Well, I think that's the thing that we're going to see is, like, you know, they've been in spring training. It's going to be cold. It's going to be a cold week. It's going to be an adjustment for everybody. You've got an adjustment for our team. The Rockies, they're coming out of, they're also in spring training. And so it's just going to be cold. It's a different kind of baseball. It's more low scoring. The strikeout stuff that Shota's got has been incredible. He had that one game in spring where he had 9 freaking strikeouts. And he looks great. As advertised, as people are ad nauseum saying on all the broadcasts. Have you noticed that that's been the catchphrase of the spring? He's as advertised. Like, I didn't see a commercial. But yeah, just like one of those things that memetically go around. Anyway, he looks great. I think it's a lot of pressure to put on the guy
to make him handle it. He's not a 23-year-old rookie. He's like a 30-year-old vet from Japan.
Yeah, I mean, he's played in big games before. In fact, that's what his whole thing was, right? That he's been in a lot of big games before. He's got a lot of experience. Anyway, I'm excited. I think he's going to be a great addition to this team. Man, to give him that, you know, you always worry. The first year in a Cubs uniform is always rough for everybody. was for Saya. It was for, I wouldn't say it was for Dansby. It wasn't, you know, didn't fly off the cover of the Sports Illustrated though either. So.
Yeah. I'm looking for an offensive bounce back from Dansby Swanson. He was great defensively last season, but I think that heel contusion really messed him up a little bit at the plate. Also probably slowed him down a little bit. I bet he could steal more bases if he were so inclined. You mentioned Seiya Suzuki, and we can just go there next. Seiya Suzuki has been red hot this spring. If you are watching Cubs games on Marquee, you've seen it. I'm going to pull up the stat line just to review a little bit for our listeners. But Seiya Suzuki this spring, slashing .459, .512, 1,081 is the slugging, not the OPS. It's out of control. 6 home runs, 2 just the other day. I feel like this might be the real Seiya Suzuki. They mentioned it on the broadcast a couple of days ago that he looked like he had finally figured out parts of the league, that going through the first couple of times, like he had heard about a Corbin Burns cutter. He had seen it on TV, but he'd never stood in the box against it. And now it's like he stood in the box against all of these guys and he's just like got a plan and he's on a mission. I think Seiya could be in for a monster year this season. Danny, what about you?
All right. You know, our friend Cody Del Mendo over at the Chuggo.
What's up, Cody?
Yeah. Well, just Monday, 2 days ago, I texted Cody because I was wondering something. He's a degenerate gambler. I am not. I did not download any of those sports apps from my phone, although we're probably advertising you one of them during our show at some point. But look at what I texted him. I said, hey, man. Just to show you the proof of it, I said, hey, man, wondering if it's possible to bet Seiya as MVP, because I didn't see him on the list. I said, what are the odds right now? And he goes, really good, plus 8,000. I have no idea what that means, by the way. I don't know what that means. I said, well, will you put 20 for me and I'll pay you on Thursday, because I'm going to go down to Country Club where they're going to be doing the opening day party down there, a live pod down there. And I said, I'll pay you Thursday, $20. I don't want to download the app. I'm like, and he goes, I'll just place the bet. And I go, if you want to go in with me, I'll split the winning. So we're going in on Seiya Suzuki MVP. Sarah, that is how freaking confident I feel about Seiya Suzuki having an absolutely monster year. I'm here to get fooled by the end of last year and by his amazing spring to say that the man's got a bat 400 break Ted Williams' record.
Okay, I don't think he's going to bat 400, but I do think that this could be a 25-plus home run season from Seiya Suzuki. I also think he can run a little bit more. One of the things I looked at over the offseason over at Bleed Cubby Blue, and if you search for a piece about what's called a go rate, you'll find it, was looking at how often the Cubs stole bases and seeing when they were making the decisions to run and whether they could run more. Seiya's a guy who I tagged as potentially being able to run more. I think he was slowed down by that oblique injury last season. He's got more speed and could use it. And I think a 2020 season from Seiya is not out of the question. I think it is possible for him to hit .275, .280. And I think he could just rake for the Chicago Cubs. He looks really comfortable in the field right now. And he, you know, when a guy is just dialed in and absolutely massacring the baseball, Seiya Suzuki has a plan and he is executing it. And it is beautiful to see.
Yeah, and at the end of last year, we just remind everybody how great that was from July through the end of the year. Well, I should say really more August, where August to September, he really carried the team, batted. He had an OPS over 1,000 in August, OPS over 1,100 in September last year. He was knocking the cover off the ball, 12 home runs in the last 2 months of the year. The other really good month he had was May. People forget that because he disappeared completely in June. He had to ride the pine for a week or something like that after around the All-Star break. And when he came back, he was just a monster. And, you know, his third year in the league, I completely agree with you. He's got a book on these guys and they don't have a book on him. I'm going to go 30-30. I'm 40-40. 50-50. We're going 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases for Seiya Suzuki. MVP is a shoe-in at that point.
Well, I don't think he's going 50-50, but I hope you're right. And, you know, plus 8,000 is great odds for you with that $20 bet. If I recall correctly, it means if you bet $100, you get $8,000 back or something.
Oh, that's really, I should bet
I could be wrong about this. I don't really gamble that much either, even though I do talk about it on podcasts every now and again. I've done some daily fantasy shows and those types of things. Let's do one more guy who might break out this season. And I'm keeping an eye on this. I feel like this has been the talk of the town. I also feel like this is the, like, Craig Council and Jed Hoyer, like, gnashing heads here about who's going to win. And I'm team Council on this one. Christopher Morrell getting a really long look at third base. It seems like Council believes in that bat and that he is such a young guy, such a talented player, strong arm, that he can just figure it out at one position. I have been saying on the show for a year and a half now that the Cubs have been doing Christopher Morrell a disservice by kind of lumping him into the Miles Mastroboni, Nick Madrigal, he's a utility guy camp, which never made any sense to me. I know there have been some moments where it's looked a little rough over there, but honestly, I think he makes some pretty spectacular plays, and he makes plays that Madrigal and Mastroboni would never make, right? Like, Christopher Morrell can make the hard plays. The problem for him is keeping it all together to make sure he makes the easy throw across the diamond. That probably comes with time. I actually think Christopher Morrell is the dude who could probably hit 35-plus home runs, absolutely solidify himself with an all-star campaign this season, and I am very here for this.
Yeah, well, he's my favorite player on the team right now. So he's a lot of fun. I've had a chance to meet him a couple times. He's so nice. I actually just saw him out at spring training. My nephew got an autograph from him because he was very friendly with the fans. And when he saw me, he was like, he was happy to see me because he recognized me. And he made a guitar motion. Like, hey, you're the guy that sang on the guitar for me. That's so he remembered all of that stuff. And, you know, as a fan of him, he's obviously a fan of me, too. And like, that's a really cool feeling to have that kind of rapport. What a nice guy. So down to earth and so talented. I completely agree. It hasn't looked great always over there this spring. There's been a lot of miscues. It seems to me a lot of it's a timing issue. There's something about just the flow of playing third base, of like playing deep in that pocket. You're really far away. Yeah, I mean, he could probably make throws in the hole better from shortstop with his giant arm than he can from third base, because it's just a different angle, and it's, I don't know, it's just got to be weird to pivot yourself that way. You're actually closer when you're standing by third base to first base than you are deep in the hole at shortstop. So, and that's where he kind of is a natural, he's kind of a natural shortstop. He can play the hell out of second base too. For some reason, he can do that throw too. But, you know, that's been the issue, is the throw. He goes, reminds me of Sean Dunstan. The airmail. Yeah. Yeah, just an arm for days, rocking in it over there. But it's too much. And he's got to put it together. But I do. If Madrigal can do it with his Fred Flintstone steps and his, you know, his twinkle toes, then I really do think that Christopher Morrell can make similar adjustments, although it's about an arm instead of legs.
Yeah, a couple of things with what you were saying there with Morrell. I agree with you on the timing thing. I think that when the throws go wrong, they go wrong because he either has too much time to think, or he takes an extra step, or he just doesn't get set. I think that that has happened less frequently than I was expecting it to. And I know some people are gonna be like, ah, it's already happened too much, whatever. Like, he's 24 years old. You're going to have to let him figure it out a little bit. And I hope that letting him figure it out a little bit means he's playing third base 75-80% of the time through the early months of the season. The other thing that I've noticed, and I think this is just going to come with time too, because he does have that, he came up as a shortstop. He was a shortstop in AA when the Cubs called him up originally. He doesn't always defer to plays that Dansby can make easier in the hole. So Morrell has such great instincts that he'll try to cut off a ball before it gets to Dansby. And I think they need to work with him a little bit on making sure that, and they were just saying this on the broadcast yesterday. I can't remember if it was Cliff Floyd saying it or if it was whoever was broadcasting, Sutt saying it, who was broadcasting with Cliff Floyd yesterday. Or not Cliff Floyd, sorry, Cole Wright, mixing up my favorite Cubs announcers. I'm a big fan of both Cliff and Cole, so want to give them shout outs here. But if Morrell can play closer to the line, and just sort of seed some of those balls that are going to go deep to the hole at short to Dansby rather than trying to cut them off and make the quick throw, that's actually a better defensive set for the Cubs. And so I just think he needs to get used to that, like which balls are his and which balls are Dansby's.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't get the practice last year. They gave it to Madrigal. And
that was malpractice. It was malpractice, yeah, honestly. I'm still angry about it. I will never forgive David Ross or Jed Hoyer for thinking that Christopher Morel should be a DH at 23 when with the tools that he has.
Absolutely. And he makes a hell of a DH, too, because he does have a great bat. So I get it. You want him in the lineup. And for the most part, at least he played his way into that last year, although he should have been in it a lot more. But, yeah, I mean, practice makes perfect. And I know they're working with him and they've got enough infield coaching to go with him. I think settling his brain down and will be really helpful once it gets going. There's going to be some growing pains, but if that bat's in there every day, maybe just the knowledge that he's earned that position on the field will give him the confidence to succeed this year and do what you just said, 35, 40 bombs, because we need it. There's a lot of power spread around this team, but Big Pop, he's probably your main guy.
Oh, he's absolutely the guy. I think the guy, and maybe we should just do this before the first break. I think Christopher Morel probably leads the team in home runs next season. He hit 37 across AAA and the majors last year, and that wasn't full playing time. That was across like 510-ish plate appearances. If he plays every day low in the lineup, he can probably get up to 600 plate appearances. I think 35 is absolutely within reach for Christopher Morel based on his power stroke and based on his approach and the improvements he's continued to make. That was another thing I looked at this offseason was how he has approached different pitches and specifically the improvements he made on sliders, the improvements he made on changeups last season. Like there was a lot of growth last year for Christopher Morel and very here for it. But my question to you, Danny, is who do you think second and third on that home run leaderboard? Because I got a name who I think is second and I wonder if it's the same name you have.
Well, do you know who I'm really hoping is second?
It's your Seiya Suzuki bet.
Well, Seiya Suzuki, yeah, I'm hoping he's second with his I hope he's first with his 50-50 year and his automatic MVP that wins me and Cody Domendo a ton of money. But no, who I really kind of hope has a huge breakout year and that the reason he didn't play is because he was blocked over there in L.A. is Michael Busch, because he's winning Rookie of the Year and he has a lot of pop potential. Like he could hit 30 home runs and he had quite a few. I got to give maybe an honorable mention to the fact that Cody Bellinger can really park it. And we saw him kind of regain his form last year. And it's another prove it deal for him. He could opt out after this year. You know, he's going to want to do it. He was hurt a little bit last year. He still had a ton of power. He hit for average as well. I mean, let's see him put up another MVP year too. Let's have it be a race between Seiya and Belly for MVP while the Rookie of the Year goes to Michael Busch.
I mean, definitely here for all of that. You know, Michael Busch is an interesting guy and I'm not 100% sold yet, but I obviously want it to work out well because he could be a stalwart member of the Cubs for a long time. This spring, he's hit 3 home runs so far. He's slashing .261, .340, .543, totally respectable slugging. The thing I'm more interested in, though, he dropped his K rate this spring down to 24.5%. And one of the few things that is kind of sticky between spring and the season, because you have enough plate appearances, which he does, he's at 53 plate appearances there, is that sort of like, are you making contact or not? Are you striking out a ton? Are you walking? Those types of things. And that's down from the 33.3% K rate he had with the Dodgers that was part of the reason he got traded to the Cubs in the first place. I would love to see Michael Busch striking out about 25% of the time or less with that type of power. I think that's what the Cubs traded for. My skepticism there is solely in that the Dodgers AAA teams play in the PCL. They play in a park that elevates offense, which is why a lot of Dodgers prospects come up and they look like they've got a great bat. Edwin Rios, anyone remember the Edwin Rios experience last year? Like those A lot of times those players struggle at the major league level because of that park difference. And so I'm curious to see how Michael Bush adapts there, but I would love to see that bat play. We are going to take a quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, we've got some more questions about what we're looking for this season. And y'all, we are 24 hours away from baseball. By the time you're listening to this, I hope you've got a calendar block tomorrow evening for that Cubs-Rangers game. It's going to be sick. But first, a quick break. All right, we're back. I want to go to another guy that actually kind of surprised me. The most recent article that I have up at BCB right now definitely predicts something different than this. And again, I think this is Craig Counsell taking it to Jed Hoyer and his presumptions, and I am here for it. I hope Craig Counsell pushes Hoyer on everything because, frankly, I feel like the Cubs have underachieved the last couple of years because of how close Hoyer plays the middle. And Counsell has a bit of like Joe Maddon in him. He's a little bit like, he's not going to bring in like the mariachi bands and things, but he's definitely going to be like, actually, I think this guy deserves the everyday spot and I'm going to see how it goes. It reminds me a little bit of like when Joe Maddon would just like keep Wilson Contreras in the lineup by having him play left and then having him play right and then having him play first because he loved the bat. Javier Assad has won the fifth starter spot. I love this for Javier Assad. I was so sure they were going to give it to Drew Smyly after he went to Driveline and his velo was up a tick and he's done it before. And and they did not. They surprised me. They gave it to Javier Assad. What do you think about this, Danny? I love it for Assad and I like it for the types of guys Counsell is letting prove themselves. He's going young, not proven vets. And I think that's good for this team.
Absolutely, especially after what we saw last year, which, you know, if David Ross was managing this team, that Drew Smyly is in the rotation. He might be starting opening day. He's my guy. He's the oldest. It's great. First of all, you add the lefty to the pen, which you kind of need. I mean, Luke Little did make the team, which I'm really excited about. Really high end stuff. Really interesting look on it because he's 8 feet tall and it comes down hard. But so you get that other lefty out of the pen. I think that's advantageous. Plus, he's kind of a long man lefty in the vein of, let's say, a Mike Montgomery. So let's look at like the Smyly situation as being a positive situation for the Cubs, even though I think a lot of people have written off Drew Smyly at this point as having any worth at all. I don't think that's true. I think that when in the pen, knowing his role, and Counsell's been clear. Counsell was clear with everybody, even about making the roster. He even told Mike Tauchman, like, I didn't agree with a lot of it. I was like, you know, Mike Tauchman, you're on the team. You give these guys the confidence, especially a player who's been around a while, that lets them relax. That lets them know where they fit on the team. My friend, who's a very funny comedian and a Brewers fan, Eric Wheelo, says, and he's been watching Counsell all these years. And he said, you know, Eric, well, you've been on Sun Ranto show with him a lot. And he said, Craig Counsell, when he sends a guy down to the minors, he always tells him how they're there to help the team. And I loved that. He was like, so if I'm going to send a guy like Hayden Wisniewski, which he already was quoted as saying how much he loves Hayden Wisniewski's stuff, it's because he's telling him that he probably told Hayden, you're going to be up here this year. Here's what we need you to do. You're going to go down there. You're going to start at AAA or whatever. We're going to keep you stretched out because we're going to need you. We don't know what's happened with Tyone's back. We don't know how Javier Assad's going to look. We might need him. We might need to stretch out the rotation. We might need to go six man. You know, this is a team that had Justin Steele pitch the most innings he's ever pitched last year. Be nice if they could not do that to him, especially if we're going to make the playoffs, that he's not running out of steam the last month of the season. When we need him, it'd be nice if Imanaga can not be like workhorsed, given more innings to do than he ever had to pitch in Japan right away. Be nice if Tyone wasn't hurt. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things. You're managing an 8-man rotation. We're going to see Ben Brown. We're going to see Wicks. Like you said earlier, he's up front in the rotation now. They're giving him their slots. He's looking at them as out-getters. It's not this stupid hierarchical left, right, left BS. He's playing it in a way that won't say he's going with his gut, but he's certainly going with a more unorthodox approach than we saw last year. So Assad in the fifth spot, I mean, I wanted it last year. The dude did nothing but prove himself. Going 8 innings in games overall. He, you know, no hit stuff sometimes. We're soft contact for days. Pitcher after pitcher on the Cubs tell you that Javier Assad is their favorite pitcher on the Cubs. Like, what has the guy got to do? Well, obviously, he did everything he could do, and now he's fifth starter. Now, he's not going to be the fifth starter for long, but he is starting the season as fifth starter.
I love how transparent Council has been about his decision-making process. And one of the things he said the other day, it was so simple, but it was also just something I've wanted a manager or a front office person to acknowledge in a way that wasn't hurtful for a long time, which was, if guys have options, we're going to use those options because it helps us to be able to send some guys back to Iowa, bring up some other guys for a different look, get all of those outs throughout the course of a long season, right? That is just true. That's one of the ways you can help the team. And I know players hate it. I mean, it's the reason that when the CBA was renegotiated, one of the things they put in was like a limit on the number of times that you can be optioned back and forth to AAA during the course of the season, because that is hard for players to go back and forth. And particularly for minor league players, your per diem is way less when you're in the minor leagues. The amount of money you're making each day is way less when you're in the minor leagues. But I do think it's so important to be transparent about that process, because that process is part of the modern game. It's the way people are going to use it. And I hate when front offices act like that doesn't exist, when they act like they're not managing those innings that way, or they're not making those types of decisions, because we can all see it with our eyes. And I just appreciate that Council respects the fans and respects the team enough to tell them exactly what's going on there.
I completely agree. And that's what Eric Wheeler told me. He's like, he is a great communicator. And that is really what the greatest thing about being a manager is. It's the most important thing, is making people know their roles, making it very clear what is expected of them, and allowing them to achieve great things on a day-to-day basis for a 162-game season. And if he can do that, and we saw him do it in Milwaukee, do a lot with a little. And now he gets to do it with a payroll that is up close to that second luxury tax tier, or if not over it. I mean, it could be over it.
They're not at the luxury tax. They're well, $7 million shy of the luxury tax, and they're probably not going over it.
Yeah, well, no, but I think they may. I mean, think about this. Like, they have the way to do it halfway through the year. They're at that first. They're past the first tier, right? I mean, they're already into a tax. They're just not at that second tier tax. They're at like 200 and I forget the exact number. But they're going to hit. They're going to be with bonuses. They're going to hit it easily. They're right. And I've seen different reports. Some people have them when you add in all the extra things that you're already over. So they're saying, why don't you just go to the next level if you're going to already be over? And there's a good chance they're sitting right there, is all I'm saying. So I think they're going to push through if they show that they've got promise to compete in the big show this year.
I mean, I'll have to double check this. I thought that they were under, but I admit I haven't looked at it in a hot minute. So it's possible that they're pushing the luxury tax. Maybe we bring that back for a later show closer to the trade deadline when we're seeing what the Cubs can do. I thought they still had a little bit of wiggle room before they hit that first cap, but I could be wrong.
Well, like Bleacher Nation, for example, says they're 30 million under. But then you look at the actual estimated tax payroll, and it's at 225 million. So, you know, it's all these reindeer games. That's the tax payroll versus the actual payroll, which is unfortunately 168. Because you remember, you still got freaking Trey Mancini and Tucker Barnhart on this stupid thing.
Yeah, those were brilliant moves. But let's. We're not talking about them today. Let's move on though, because we will return to the competitive balance tax after I've had a chance to look at these numbers a little bit. I was real sure the Cubs weren't at it, but I have not looked at it frequently recently, and so we'll double check that. We'll return to that for a future show. But let's talk about. Let's stay on Craig Council here for a minute. And things that might look a little bit different, because I'm curious, Danny, one of the things that I'm definitely looking out for, you mentioned that Christopher Morel is your favorite Cub right now. It's probably my favorite Cub too. Real close second is Adbert. And the bullpen situation here is something I'm going to be keeping my eye on as the season starts. How is Craig Counsell going to manage this pen? He has not yet committed to a single closer, which I hear as maybe a bit of a committee between Hector Neris and Adbert. It's Alpha Lay right now, because we've been saying Alpha Lay for multiple years, and I swear I heard Pat Hughes say it is Alzo Lay, and I don't know when this changed, but I've been very deliberate about this for multiple years now, and I want to make sure I'm saying one of my favorite players' names right.
Well, I mean, I think it's Alzolay. Personally, dude. I don't really think Pat Hughes knows. I don't think Pat Hughes speaks Spanish. But
are you suggesting the man that says Wilson Contreras does not speak Spanish?
Well, no, that's actually Contreras is how you would say. You know,
I know he does. Contreras. He has it on Contreras.
Yeah,
Wilson Contreras,
like Maguay. You know, I, that sound exists in Spanish. A, not so much. You know, I not saying that.
How about we'll just call him Adbert today? What do you see from Craig Counsell in the bullpen? I'll look this up for later.
I've seen him do it incredible things with an incredible bullpen in Milwaukee for many a year. And I've seen in years when the Brewers didn't have such a great bullpen or starting rotation that they still figured out how to do it with a bunch of number three starters. They had, remember that year they had like a bunch of number three starters, and that was the entire starting rotation and bullpen, and they somehow beat the Cubs, you know, every single time. And so he knows what he's freaking doing. He knows how to deploy these dudes, and the bullpen's got a little bit of a different look this year. You got Yency Almonte. You've got Hector Neris. He made it in. You've got, I believe it's Merriweather is Alzolay as a closer. But those are your two main, Ed Quas, who came over last year, made the team. They all have like little sidearm, little three quarter. Yency Almonte's got some funk. Like, so you got different kind of looks. And then you look Luke Little, dialing up the speed, coming from the left side. That's a thing we didn't have really last year until the end.
Yeah, there were no lefties in the bullpen at all.
Yeah, because Hughes was never healthy. And so it's like, you know, you're looking at it, and it looks pretty good to me. I love Adbert Alzolay. I do wonder if the Cubs are really going to compete if they go make a Aroldis Chapman-esque move. Not Aroldis Chapman, who is busy making his own moves on his mom, apparently. But I don't know if you saw that video either.
I definitely did not. And please, I can't today. Like, I don't have the energy for whatever Aroldis is doing.
Some people just drove off the road.
That is Pittsburgh's problem, Danny.
It is.
We're done.
But I could see them dialing. I could see them taking Alzolay a step back from the eighth inning, Hector Neris, and then good, look it up later. Look it up when you get
I
to
absolutely will not. I have a million things going on, and whatever is going on with that storyline, that's just going to stay out there where I don't need to deal with it. You know why? Because I'm taking care of myself this year, Danny. Yeah. I'm not doing that to myself.
Self-love.
Anyway,
I like
Baseball
it.
Reference agrees with you that it is Alzolay, so I'm going to keep saying that until I hear otherwise. However, I don't think they're going to go out and get anybody else. I think if anybody steps into that role who is not Adbert, it's Hector Neris, who I very much love. But I also think it's still probably Adbert's job for the most part. He truly stepped into that role last season in ways that I thought were great.
He did, and I guess I'm just not personally convinced yet. I don't know what it's going to take. He did look great. He got hurt at the end of last year. That was one of the reasons the Cubs were not able to like have a Diamondbacksian sort of run into the playoffs. I love him. I don't know why I'm unconvinced. Maybe it's because he came out as a starter first, and or that he doesn't throw 106. Or I don't know what it's going to take for me to really trust it. But I think it's just going to have to be consistently being nails, getting out there, getting the outs. You know, he's not one of those hair on fire closers. He's just, you know, he's just not. Neris, though, his velocity is down. And he hasn't looked real. I mean, he was been decent this spring, and then he wasn't. So I don't know what's going on there. He had a really rough inning the other day that I was watching, and I was like, this isn't what you want to see at the end of spring training. But in his picture as a Cub, when you Google his name, I just did this, he's biting his chain. So I want to love this guy. He's literally biting a gold chain. Like, probably, remember that old thing, like the beginning of Underdog? You ever watch Underdog, the cartoon?
God, I totally forgot Underdog was a cartoon until you just said that.
He flips him a quarter and the guy bites it to make sure it's real. Remember back in the day when you'd bite a coin?
No.
Me either. But it happened in the
I remember seeing that in shows, but I always thought that was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I guess back in the day, people were easily fooled. You could, like, pass off a quarter as a Ritz cracker as a quarter or something. They'd be like, this is a Ritz cracker.
I know the taste of money. So let's move on from the bullpen before we get way over our skis here. No, this is a fun episode, Danny. It's been a hot minute since we've chatted baseball, and I'm excited about it. Ian Happ at leadoff. I'm really not sure how I feel about this one. I mean, frankly, when you mentioned Jose Kwas, all I could think is, God, I miss Nelson Velasquez and that 40 home run bat. And I'm so sad that I know Ian Happ's fine. He loves being a Cub, and that's great. And, like, I like Nelson Velasquez a lot more than Ian Happ. I'm sorry. Like, I always have. I always will. He is a career, like, 350 on base percentage guy and OBP of 360 last season. I understand why you would want that in the leadoff spot. And we have seen this movie before. Ian Happ is not good as a leadoff hitter.
I mean, it's not terrible. I mean, I did look it up, you know, as a leading off as the first batter of the game. He's got 81 plate appearances in which he's walked 12 times. That's pretty good. He has struck out 24 times, so that's not good. You know, it's a start out game. Batting average pretty low, 246, but not OBP, 358. And he's got a 909 OPS because he's got five home runs in those 81 plate appearances. So at least five times in those 81 plate appearances starting a game, you started the game 1-0. Or at least, unless you were the home team, then who knows? It might have been 8-1 at that point. But leading off an inning, he does pretty well, too. He's got an 840 OPS, so he's good at that. He does work a walk. The OBP, as you just mentioned, is there from last year, 344. Definitely really – or no, in his career, he's got a 344, sorry, OBP. That'll play, you know, overall in the leadoff spot. I mean, you'd like to see that a little more. Dexter Fowlery at, like, 380, 400. Like, let's get up there, be even better. But I don't hate it. Who else? Nico?
Nico Horner, who was great in the leadoff spot last year. And I don't know why we're trying to do, like, last season, it was Nico Horner and Mike Tauchman, and it worked just fine. And I have watched Ian Happ struggle in the leadoff spot before. And frankly, I don't know where you were on this last year, but there was a moment where Ian Happ was, like, hitting third consistently while he was struggling that all of Cubs Twitter was just like, what are we doing?
Yeah, that's – I'm just happy. Yeah, he's not doing that.
Nico – why is Nico, like, so far down in the lineup when – it's not like Ian Happ is fired up this spring.
He's hurt.
Was hurt, and then when he came back was not very good.
Yeah, I mean – switch hitter. I mean, it makes sense on paper in many respects, that
which is why they tried it before.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't totally hate it. I like it better than him batting third. I'll tell you that freaking much. So I'll give you, even though he'll bat to start the game, he'll get the most at bats of anybody. It's a certain kind of mindset that I think you need to do it. Nico would be fine. I don't know. Switch hitter. I don't hate it.
I'm pretty meh on it, but I'm willing to have my mind changed.
Yeah, I'm more for it than against it, I guess. The thing that bothers me about Happ is if you want to talk about what bothers me about Happ, it's a no trade clause. It's what bothers me about him. And the fact that Alexander Canario is going to be, you know,
the next Nelson Velasquez.
Exactly.
Like, how many 40 home run bats can the Cubs trade for relievers? Jorge Soler, Nelson Velasquez, Alexander Canario, like, Jed Hoyer's just like, these 40 home run bats are expendable.
We don't need them. Yeah. Well,
who
we've got.
Who needs home runs?
Well, and not only that, Canario can play pretty much every at the outfield spot. He's a good defender. They even threw him in center last year. At least he's going to get regular bats down in minor leagues and continue his development. But he only has the one option year left, I think. So, you know, at some point, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, the outfield is totally locked up with Bellinger, Happ, and Saya. So, it's, you know, that's a little bit annoying, except for they're all good players.
I'm happy with the Saya and Bellinger parts of this. It drives me crazy that the Cubs have all these intriguing corner outfield prospects or just like great outfield prospects, and Ian Happ is just like blocking left field.
Left field should never be blocked. In many ways, like, left field was the old DH of the National League, where you
like Kyle Schwarber. There's another 40 home run bat. The generator's just like, I don't need it.
I don't need it.
It does. I don't need these 40 home run bats.
Yeah, non-tender him.
Christ, so, man. Let's end with hopefully a happier outfield spot. I wrote a piece during the offseason. It's actually one of my favorite things I've ever gotten to work on, about Cody Bellinger's weird season last year and the numbers underlying it. And I tried to make the case that I think what Cody Bellinger did last year is actually sustainable. If you want to look that one up, it's came out about a month and a half ago. It basically, my argument is that he was making weaker contact with runners on and in two strike counts deliberately. You can see it. He's just kind of playing pepper with the ball, trying to do kind of what Anthony Rizzo used to do, you know, like just kind of hitting the ball to where the players are not, keep the inning alive. Most of his swing decisions are where he's trying to swing for the fences, were earlier in camps, and he's literally swinging harder. Shout out to a friend of mine and a person I work with over at PitcherList, Kyle Bland, who's the director of data analytics there. PitcherList tracks individual player decisions in terms of pitches and swing decisions, and they have data that shows Bellinger was swinging harder when there were not two strikes, and he would kind of like settle for less power when there were two strikes. And guess what that does? It increases your average, it decreases your strikeout rate, and it takes a hammer to your hard hit rate, which is the number that everybody is freaking out about with Cody Bellinger. I'm not sure Bellinger's going to go hit 300 and go 20-20 again. But I wouldn't be stunned if he hit 285 and went 20-20 again, particularly if he stays healthy all season, since he's got another prove-it deal. Danny, which Cody Bellinger do you think is going to show up for the Chicago Cubs this season?
I think it's the one from last year. I think it's a great match. I think he loves being a Cub. I feel like he was a really great fit here. You felt that just palpably. It was obviously a huge need on the team. And I mean, there was another first baseman that used to do exactly what you just said, which is, you know, maybe choke up on the bat and not have as much power in order to just get on base and help the team. And that's Anthony Rizzo. And we all loved what he did. So, I mean, if he and he hit higher, Bellinger hit higher than Rizzo ever did.
Well, and this is the thing. I look at that, and it's a great comp with Rizzo. That's just old school baseball. Like, the shift sort of made that very difficult to do for a while, because you weren't able to like simultaneously try to swing for power like to the pull side and also get some of that weak contact there, because that all just got gobbled up by the floating shortstop who was like hanging out as a rover in right field or left field, as the case may be. You can't do that anymore, because you have to start on the dirt, if you have the contact ability to be able to direct the ball to those pockets of the outfield that are shallow, and you also have the power ability to force the outfielders to play deep enough that you can hit it over their heads, I think this is absolutely a sustainable tool that a hitter can use, particularly early in their career. It's worth remembering that Cody Bellinger is still like 28, 29 years old. It's not like he's losing bat speed or anything like that at this point in his career. And this is just the way the game of baseball was played for decades prior to the three true outcomes and launch angle era. So I see this as very sustainable. I like Cody Bellinger, where he is in the lineup for the Cubs, and think he's going to have an outstanding year again. Probably a good enough year that he won't be a Cub next year. We can do this whole dance with like Cody Bellinger's contract again next offseason. But for this year, I absolutely love this for the Chicago Cubs, and he makes the team better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we so glad they got it done. We all kind of, the first thing we said when the season ended was like, okay, thing number one to do, re-sign Cody Bellinger. It was exactly what you needed. We didn't even know about Michael Bush at the time, about first base. And we still don't know if that's going to work out, but I just have high hopes. Center field, we all saw that PCA was maybe not ready. Spring training kind of proved that, although he's got great tools, and I'm really excited about the future of PCA. To have Cody Bellinger and another year of development of PCA and maybe getting a cup of coffee later on in the year for him, he's obviously going to bring the glove. But that just bat for him to get down in AAA and be able to play every single day, that's going to be great. So then, I mean, it's just, we were looking at PCA as an opening day starter and maybe batting 123. You know what I mean? That's what we were looking at. And now that's not going to happen. They got a backup for the backup. They have way more depth than they had last year. So anybody that's like, oh, the Cubs are just running it back out there, BS, not true. There's a lot more depth. There's a lot more young guys that are going to help out the team this year. The bullpen is a lot better than it was before. You didn't just swap out Stroh for Imanaga. You got Wicks and Ben Brown another year older. You got some experience coming in. I believe in this team. I think we're going to win the Central. And you know me, I'm a realist. And a lot of people accuse me of being negative and cynical. No, I'm just being realistic. If I think the Cubs suck, I'm not going to sit there and lie to you and be like, oh, they're good. Why are you not a real fan? You should love them no matter what. No, I do love the clothing of, I love Cubby Blue no matter what. I love Wrigley Field no matter what. I like Cubs fans no matter what. What I hate is crappy teams when everybody's telling me that they're good. And last year's team was abysmal. I didn't enjoy watching that, even though they almost made it. It wasn't too little. This year, I'm excited. It's a better team. They're not running it back out. It's different.
All right, Danny, give me your win number. How many games are the Cubs winning?
162. No.
Okay, that's
not it. I think this is an 80. I'm going to put it 88 wins.
I could see you.
I was going to say 89, just because Boise Zimmer.
I like that.
All right, 89. I'm going 89. Let's go positive.
I actually do think this team is very similar to last year's team. And the thing about last year's team for me, I felt like the Cubs put two different teams on the field. There was the early season team where we had to watch Eric Hosmer out there for hashtag Ross reasons and Trey Mancini for why. And like all of the every game Tucker Barnhart started was just a lost cause, in my opinion. I'm like, what are we doing here? And we had to like pretend Nick Madrigal was a third baseman. A lot of those guys are gone, but like some of them are still around. They're just in the correct roles now, right? Like Nick Madrigal is not going to be the everyday third baseman. He's going to be on the bench as a contact bat, like a la Tommy La Stella back in the day, while Christopher Morel mans the hot corner. That is correct, right? Like Mike Tauchman is going to be on the bench in case Cody Bellinger needs a breather or whatever. Like Cody Bellinger can play some first if Michael Bush is struggling. Like I just feel like the fun parts of last year's team are still there and they have a guy who's going to manage them better, which I think probably adds up to 86 wins. I'm a little bit less optimistic than you are there, but I think 86 wins absolutely wins the NL Central. Now that Craig Counsell is a Cub, not a Brewer. And I don't really think the Cardinals are that good. The thing I want to close out on here was my favorite comment during the offseason, Danny, and then we're going to close this episode out and get ready for some baseball. We'll be back next week, though, y'all. We're not going to leave you hanging again. Nolan Arenado got asked what went wrong for the Cardinals last year, and he said, we just lacked a veteran presence in the clubhouse, which is why they apparently went out and signed, like, Lance Lynn and Matt Carpenter and, like, every guy over 35. I'm like, Nolan, what do you do here? Like, yeah. What do you think your role is on the Cardinals?
How old does he think he is?
I understand that Yadi was the granddad of the Cardinals clubhouse for like every year that Nolan Arenado was there. But like you and Paul Goldschmidt are it, my man. Like you are the veteran presence in the clubhouse.
Yeah, well, it's obvious, you know, if you're without your first ballot Hall of Famer, Yadier Molina, with your sticky chest. No, I'm I think there is a lot to that for Yadi not being there. I'm surprised he's not the freaking manager. If he was the manager, they'd probably win the World Series last year, unfortunately. You know, it's like...
No, I agree. Like, let's keep Yadi out of that manager seat for a hot minute so the Cubs can win a few. Danny, happy opening day. Happy baseball eve. Where can people find you for your baseball takes this season?
Well, you can find me physically at Country Club tomorrow, hanging out with the CHGO crew. So that'll be fun. If you're looking for something to do in the Wrigleyville area, I'll be over there celebrating what really should be a national holiday, opening day. And then we're also tomorrow, I don't know when you're going to get this show, but we're going to go live, me and Michael Cotton from the Sun Ranto show, a little pregame before the Cubs play in Texas. We're going to 5 p.m. Central. Sun Ranto show at Sun Ranto. You just find me all those places.
Awesome. You can find me at BCB underscore Sarah. You can find my Cubs writing at leadcubbyblue.com. You can find me and Danny here each week coming at you with Cup of Cubby Blue. And every now and again, you can find me on the Sun Ranto show as a guest as well. I'm so excited. Cubs baseball is back. Cannot wait for show to make his MLB debut at Wrigley Field on opening day at Wrigley Field. And yeah, y'all, play ball. Till next time.